are back here on the Back Pocket Podcast. Today's guest is a Minnesota native, a U of M legend, a 15-year NHL vet. Paul Martin, how you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me. Pleasure to be on here with you guys.
Awesome, man. And, you know, from a fellow long-haired gentleman to another, I just have to compliment, your hair is still looking fantastic.
Well, thank you. I've been blessed with a decent set of hair, so pretty fortunate that way, as yourself. And I just don't have the mustache to go with it, so congratulations.
Thanks, man. Would you say that you're a mustache guy? Like, it, outside of Movember, would we ever see you rocking a mustache?
Probably not. I've tried before. I'm more of the beard person with the combo. I haven't pulled off the mustache, but it doesn't grow in as nice as yours, so that's probably why.
We were making some of the runs into the playoffs and playing in the Stanley Cup. Did you consider yourself to have one of the stronger beards on the team? I know there's a few guys like Sidney Crosby who's always struggling every year to actually fully grow that in.
Yep, good question. Yeah, I would have to start a little early to get an advantage. And obviously, when I first started out, I didn't have very good facial hair. But towards the end, I'd start early and I'd get a pretty good beard. But it was more of like a neared, like a neck beard. It didn't kind of come in up here, you know. So, And then going to San Jose, I tried to compete with like the Brent Burns and the Jumbo Thornton's beard. I thought maybe they were so good because they had such a nice beard. Evidently, that's not the case. They were good at hockey before the beard, so the beard didn't work for me, but it was fun to try to grow for a little bit.
Oh, that's electric. Did you ever find guys adding like Rogaine, some like color? Like they were darkening their beard because they knew they couldn't grow it in, but they had to fill it in a little bit?
Yep, I've definitely seen some guys take the gray out and use different colors for sure to try to fill it in. You know, nothing better than the full playoff beard, so...
Oh, that's awesome.
Right. And, you know, we obviously like had to look up, you know, what you looked like in your playing career. And I just love like that you have such a cleaned up look now. Like you have really cleaned it up. I'm proud of you.
Well, thank you. You know, I feel like when you're basically playing a game, you know, for most of your life, you know, and in the locker room and you get to have fun. And then kind of when you're done, it's like, all right, what's next? I kind of got to, you know, talk to people doing different things and, you know, represent myself accordingly. And so this is kind of the best I, you know, get as far as clean shaving and whatnot. So we're trying, we're getting there.
That's awesome. I want to jump in here and transition to, you know, this is podcast number 4 here. And we're doing a series with mental health, focusing on mental health. We just partnered with Masonic Children's Hospital to fundraise this holiday season and in the extended future to help with their mental health programs and bring more awareness to all that they're doing in that field. And I know that you work with and started Shine a Light, which is amazing. And Patrick Larson was able to connect us with you. One thing that we got the inside scoop on is the music therapy that you're doing with Shine a Light. First, I would love just to, like, give us a quick background on our listeners on Shine a Light, and then I would love to dive into the music therapy side of things. I think that is the coolest thing.
Yeah, definitely. So Shine a Light was founded in 2016. It basically started as a anti-bullying and suicide prevention foundation. I'm from Elk River, Minnesota, and we have a big family. We lost a couple relatives to suicide and some close family friends and some kids at the high school. And so like over my years as a professional athlete, there's the Mark Parrishes, the Matt Cullens, Sean Podine, Danny Heinold, who have foundations around the area, you know, helping support different causes that are dear to them. And so for me, that kind of seemed like something that I was passionate about and had a purpose for helping. And you kind of see what it does to the family members and the community. And obviously those numbers are growing, you know, today. And so to start at that point, we had a couple of successful fundraisers at First Ave, centered around music, you know, Gear Daddies, Mason Jennings, Shane Martin Band, and some others. And we would have, you know, some kids perform from Washburn Center for Children. You know, our next event, we're hoping to have somebody from Masonic there perform, and they kind of share a little bit about what their mental health journey and what music has meant to them and how it's helped them get through tough times, you know, expressing themselves and stuff like that nature. So that's kind of the back story of Shine a Light. And now kind of within the last year or so, we have partnered or helped out Masonic Children's, and we provided them with some musical instruments for their music therapy rooms. And one of our goals is to try to build out some of those rooms. Because, like, I think I listened to one of your other podcasts, you kind of talked about the lack of resources and the funding for certain areas of their mental health wings. And so that's kind of what we're trying to help in too. And you know, they have the like the Jason Zucker suite. And I just saw Paul Fletcher doing a little clip with one of the Yamhouse guys where they perform a concert to some of the kids there, you know, dealing with tough times. And so that's something we'd like to help raise some money to get some acts in there to help perform for the kids and make their experience a little more easier, the challenge they face a little more lighter, you know, going through that experience. So that's kind of where we're at now to help try raise some money. And congrats to what you guys are doing. I love it to raise, you know, money for that, the mental wellness there. You know, they could use it. Like hearing a lot of the stories about kids getting turned away and not having the space, you know, for kids is, you know, heartbreaking to know kind of what they're going through, especially through COVID and everything, to have that safe space when they need it. So I love what you're doing too.
Sick, man. And can we like dive in a little bit on to, I guess, these the music side of it that helps, like what is helping so much with the music and the mental health? Like these kids that come in that are able to participate in these programs, what does it actually do to them to actually, you know, help them in a like help them leaving in a better spot? Like what is that, what are is kind of the process or how does that all work?
Yeah, I mean, good question. I think probably a number of things. And I recently was reading an article from the U of M Foundation that is helping do some research into like arts and crafts work for kids in helping anxiety and depression. So it's something, and they're seeing really good results. So it's something similar like that. It gives them an opportunity to grow some skill, you know, a safe outlet to express themselves, you know, whether through lyrics or learning how to play an instrument, what occupies certain spaces in your brain that normally you don't use, developing that skill, or whether it's even just listening to music and zoning out, you know, working on some mindfulness stuff and meditation, you know, dancing, so many things that help them. It helps relate to their experience, you know, what they're going through. And then they're able kind of, you know, some of them have expressed, you know, how much it's helped them and have, you know, written songs, written lyrics, stuff like that to help it, you know, explore that creative expression on some side. I don't know if you guys, you know, love music or enjoy music. And, you know, for me, that's what it did growing up. And I'm not a great musician, but I love, you know, the collective effervescence of being at a concert or experiencing something of people creating live music. And that's another thing we'd like to explore is having those mini concerts for the kids there to have a little, you know, sense of community that they're kind of in this together. So.
That's awesome. Can you talk more about the Yam House event? We're huge Yam House guys, and never I didn't know they like did like a little concert, but knowing that like Andrew and I have been to plenty of their concerts, we've had different events where they've, you know, played for us. So what was the whole connection there? That sounds awesome.
I actually just had saw it on a stream on like an Instagram where Paul Fletcher, who's emceed some of our events at First Ave, and then met a couple of the Yamhouse guys at a Hendrickson Foundation hockey game because they're hockey guys too, and talked about maybe having them perform at one of our events down the road, our Soul Shine event for Shine a Light. And it just was a brief clip of them performing, or two of them performing in the Jason Zucker suite at Masonic to help, you know, with the kids, you know, have a good time and help raise some money. So something like that, you know, is powerful. I think it just kind of represents, you know, kind of what we are for Shine a Light is like that music part of the mental health, you know. And then we're also we work with, you know, movement or mindfulness, like the three M's are already taken. So we're trying to use up all the M's there. But that was kind of the event with the Yamhouse crew. So something pretty cool.
Oh, that's awesome. Do you have a and not to put you on the spot here, but like I'm curious, do you have a story, a specific story with some of the people that have come through your program and have walked away with something really powerful?
For sure. I mean, I think one of them in particular is Edie Bischoff, who has been one of our, you know, rock stars, we call him, who is from Washburn Center and able to share her story at one of our events, and play some of her music that she's written and also some others. And she just kind of shares about what music has done for her and the kind of impact it has on releasing some of relieving some of her anxiety, and being able to acclimate back into the classroom, and relate to other kids. And so it just is more of a touching story about, the struggles or challenges that most, I think, youth face on different degrees, and finding ways to cope with that by, using music and songwriting. Evie's one, and then Lily, who's at was at Masonic. We brought in a bunch of new instruments for them, and donated to play because they were lacking in that department. Some bongo drums and djembe drums and keyboards and all this kind of stuff. And so she just basically was going to be performing at our next event, which we postponed till the summer. And just kind of the same thing, described just how important music is in her life and a way to express herself as a creative outlet, and just how much it's helped her, grow as a person too. So I think a lot of the similar stories along those lines.
Sweet
Is
man.
there instruments? Is there instruments that kind of get used more than most? You're outside of like the standard guitar and drums, but I'm curious if there's like you're like surprised, like I didn't know I'm gonna need to get 12 more of these type of thing.
Good question. Yeah, and I'm not there as much, and I don't know what they use, but like I feel like unless you're actually like a musician or someone that's well practiced with the guitar or piano or something like that, the drums are great for drum circle, like tambourines, the xylophone, just things that are making noise, that they connect with, and even like sound bowls or stuff like that when it gets into more of like a space of contemplation or like a meditation spot. So I think it's more about noise, unless it is something that they've actually like experienced before, have practiced a little bit.
Yeah, I was gonna say, like, the xylophone, that's a low entry level one where you can just bang on that thing and there's all kinds of experiences you can get from that altogether, so I love that. Have they ever considered doing or like getting like a soundboard where you just like have a programmed set of like a bunch of different sounds, like a bunch of EDM artists use it kind of, but you could literally go nuts with that and have them create like their own beats and get like a studio. I feel like that would be so sick.
That's a great segue. I think one of the things that we're trying to do, we've been in the rooms there a couple of times, and so the funds that we come in will be coming in from our next event will go to building out those rooms, and we'd like to put in a recording studio, like you said, get some
Dude.
new equipment for them to record, whatever they want, things of that nature, decorate the rooms, maybe like a Prince themed room or stuff like that, just to get a little bit of the Minnesota music culture and stuff like that. So that's one of the our ideas or things that we'd love to do down the road if we're allowed to. So
Cool. I
and as
definitely.
we have
Oh, yeah,
these
go ahead, Andrew.
convers yeah go ahead sorry Dick. Sorry.
No, dude, you go first, man.
Okay, as we have these conversations, it's really cool to hear what we're doing with these with our money and helping fundraise for these programs, as we are like this is not a space that we're very knowledgeable in right now, and we're excited to continue to learn. And as we have these conversations as well, during and Declan and I are student athletes. We played football at St. Thomas. We were fortunate to have Emily Rooney just on the podcast, who works for the Vikings, now works for the Big Ten. She played Division One volleyball at Washington State. And then Mark Dowdle, who also is a student athlete. But as we had these conversations, it was coming more into light of how mental health wasn't really talked about as much when we were in our playing days. When you had struggles, it was more of like the push through, push forward type mantra. And just kind of curious, when you were going through the ranks of college into professional hockey, and seeing yourself or some of your teammates, dealing with contract battles and health issues and performance, making sure you're on top of it. I'm just kind of curious on. Now you're getting into the children's side of it, but more on a personal level, on the relatability side. What was that like? Did you have struggles?
Yeah, I definitely did. I mean, the old, shake it off, toughen up, mentality, and especially at, football or hockey or being contact sports. I mean, when you look at, certain athletes today, the amount of pressure and expectations that come into performing, at a high level, and you have the gymnasts or what, Michael Phelps, and some of the premier athletes talking about how they've sacrificed their mental health for the good of their sport. And so I feel like from my experience towards the end of my career, I really kind of struggled with it coming to an end in my identity as an athlete. things of that nature, and played through broken bones and through concussions. And it really took a whole toll on I think my mental health and the way I looked at myself as enjoying the sport of hockey. And it became more of a job or something that I did, and how I, determined the value that I brought that way. And so, like, when I was done and retired, I was drinking a lot. I went through a whole kind of mental wellness journey out in California, and picked up a lot of different new practices, and had a new kind of outlook on who I was as a person, away from sports. And I think, kind of like what you asked, I think it's tough. Like, nowadays, it's the system in place is getting a scholarship or making high money at the next level, and specialization with kids at a really young age, to trying to get to this peak, and the amount of pressures and stuff that it puts on. And back then, they didn't have, like, seeing a psychologist or a therapist was kind of frowned upon, right? The stigma of asking for help, or for support, especially as, a male athlete, I think has changed. And you're seeing more, I think, like, you have skating coaches and player development coaches, and which are great for the sport, but I feel like the entrance into kind of like a mental health capacity is, like, whether it's a therapist or somebody that can help you understand your relationship to your sport and help you achieve things, through, like, that connection and love and support and perspective that we take on why we do things. So for me, after, I struggled for a while and have a kind of new outlook now that I'm back at school and helping the Gopher, men's team. It's a kind of a different mentality, and working with kids, instead of just telling them that they have to do something. And there's more of a why behind it. You're trying to understand why you're doing certain things. And there's so many cooks in the kitchen, these days, with parents and player development coaches and stuff. It's like there's so many things going on. I mean, just like social media, cell phone, like there's a lot of distractions that we didn't have, going through. Like, I didn't have that kind of stuff. So I imagine it's a lot of pressure and expectation. So just trying to help them understand their experience, enjoy it on some level, and then try to, help give them a healthy perspective in sport. And then I think the biggest thing is just that community too. It's the individualistic kind of society we live in now. It's trying to bring these kids together to try to accomplish something, like, together, and how important it is that we rely on, like, other people to help us do that. That love and support is really important.
Yeah, oh, I love that answer, and I think, Andrew and I relate heavily on the re-identifying, I guess, after you finish being an athlete. There's you put so much time and energy into that sole goal to be the best version of yourself in that regard, and then all of a sudden you're, like, kind of stripped away from it, and you have to find kind of a new outlet to do it. And I think what you said here to finish your answer was just, like, you can't do it alone. You have to have a community, and there's various outlets that it sounds like you were providing for these kids, and that you had when you were going through hockey. And I think, like, the teammates we had in football, like, those are still my best friends. Obviously, Andrew and I were teammates, and that's how we started this podcast 6 years ago now. Wow. And to me, it's awesome now that there's first definitions for how people are feeling anxiety, depression, and there's answers for how to, like, help some of these things. But then the resources are welcomed now. Like, my sister is a freshman at University of Pittsburgh, and she plays soccer there, and she's talking with her therapist at least once or twice a week. And her first semester freshman year, as you can imagine, is a very burdensome time, especially when you're trying to become an engineer. And so she was able to just, like, freely utilize that, and really speaks to me about it as if it was always there. And I think that's just something that I'm really excited about, and excited to be kind of a part of, in terms of, like, we're a bit of that resource, we're a bit of that voice, we're something that can make that much bigger of an impact. And I'm just really stoked about it, man. And I really like your outlet and your approach with Shine a Light. And it's exciting to see where it's all going too. Because it's, I'm like it, I guess, yeah, I'm just really excited to see where it goes, man. Honestly, that's so cool. The,
Yeah, thank you.
yeah. What was the other question I had? Oh, I guess, who were some of those resources, like, when you finished, like, your professional career? Who were some of those resources or people that you kind of leaned on to kind of help you re-identify and fuel up, essentially?
For sure. I mean, good question. I think for me, like when I went to California, it kind of to get sober and kind of work on myself, it was a little bit of a spiritual journey. And for me, like there was a therapist, and then I relied on a guru, I called him, who was kind of versed in readings and meditations and kind of a whole different kind of set of centered living and things of that nature. And then the power of the group. A lot of the guys out there that when I was done were former hockey players or athletes that had finished sport and relied heavily on them, as they navigated that loss. And I think for a lot of people that don't, think that it would be difficult when you've grown up doing something your whole life, it operates your body and your mind in a certain way where you're not really getting those feeling again. Like it sounds weird, but sometimes I just want to get like hit as far as like I miss, the physical, contact, and I miss being in the locker room with the guys and all that kind of stuff that you don't really get. I mean, I think there's a reason why, CEOs and of organizations and businesses try to mimic somewhat of a sports, culture as far as, the teamwork and the communication, the leadership, that kind of things in the real world. And so it definitely has a lot of value. It just, when I was done, I felt like that's all I had was hockey, And so for me, it was just reframing who I was as a person. And, I have a big heart and a lot of skills that I'm trying to kind of learn in this real world now. And then how am I being of service to others? So through a lot of, getting back into some exercise and some meditation and yoga, a lot of reading, things of that nature. And then part of the group are people that have, come before me that I rely on a lot of mentors that have kind of done this, before me. So, yeah, thankful for them.
Killer. And you mentioned how you're a coach now with the Gophers. How long have you been doing that?
This is my third year, and this will probably be my last as a graduate assistant. So I've really enjoyed it.
Got it. So wait, I've done as a graduate assistant, and then are you getting a second education?
Yep. So part of me coming back to help the Gophers was to continue on with my schooling. So I'm getting a master's in youth developmental leadership right now, in the School of Social
Sweet.
Work. Yeah. So I'm learning a lot of great educators and program developers, kind of right in the wheelhouse with Shine a Light and things of that nature. So it's just been a really given me more meaning and purpose, I think, kind of when I was done, to come back to school and come back to hockey, where I was more familiar and working with the guys, and we do some leadership work with them out of some books, that we didn't have a lot of when we were coming through, just kind of character development, stuff like that. So I really gravitate towards that, and it's been giving me, that meaning and purpose that, we kind of look for when we're done with sport.
Oh, I love that you parlayed getting your second education to then go coach at your former school, the Gophers. That's incredible. Okay, this might be a tough question, at least for me, because I was terrible at retaining information from a classroom perspective. But okay, so your youth and development, anything that you've learned in the last month or so or extended that's shocked you, that you were like, didn't know that this was what they were teaching, in a classroom standpoint.
Well, we don't get too much into the what they're
What they're
teaching in the
teaching in the
classroom
classroom as
as
of
of right
right
now.
now. Okay.
Into the remember, like I'm one of those guys that like will highlight
Highlight
everything
everything
that
that
it
it thinks
thinks
it's
important,
important,
so
so
I
I
can go
go
back
back
and
and
read
read
it
it
by
by
the
the
end,
end,
like a whole
whole
book's
book's highlighted,
highlighted,
and
and
I,
I
you know, don't
don't
remember,
remember,
don't remember that. I'm the
but
exact same way, the exact same way.
no. So, and it's so like valuable. I want to tell the story. I mean, that'll be into one of the things where you like the average quality. It's like for me, it's like I want to be able to communicate what I learn and read, articulately. And it's like I struggle with that, and I don't know if some of it's, concussions and like trying to kind of re-get acclimated
Fair.
into that,
Yep.
but some of the things that I enjoy learning about are the leadership parts and just about like right now I'm reading Range by David Epstein, and talks about specialization at an early age, right? And like with kids in sport, everyone, like parents, pay a ton of money to get their kids into one sport and playing year round. And so many more studies are coming out that it's burnout factors a lot higher. And the people that actually make it, whether it's in sports or even outside of sport, are the kind of the generalists where they have different experiences, they learn different things, they solve more problems because they have more knowledge in different areas. And a lot of the athletes that are mentioned in that book have played a lot of different sports. And I don't know if you guys played other sports growing up, but it's refreshing to hear that kind of information coming out, and especially here, kind of the state of hockey and kids, and parents and their relationship with, the pressure on the kids and money spent and stuff, to know that you don't have to do that at an early age and it's not going to give you an advantage.
Yep, we were both multi-sport athletes, and I definitely commended that. And that was kind of, I think we like when we were growing up, I think we were on like the tail end of the specialization because I played lacrosse too, and that was one of the things was like the specialization was just starting to hit. Like kids were committing as eighth graders to like Duke and all these and Notre Dame and all these things, and like most people were just like. Or most of the coaches were like, "Hey, we love football players too, you know." So we like guys who can knock some skulls every once in a while. And I think that is like the specialization part, especially in range, is kind of a bit of, like it's a bit of a metaphor for life. Like you can't just be an all out corporate salesman, like or a guy who just like absolutely loves his job. Like it's okay that you love your job, but you just can't do it all the time. You got to have some balance. And I think, you know, like having a girlfriend's a great realization of that is like you can't just always be working and you can't just not be hanging out with your girlfriend, your wife, or whoever it is. But there's life is multifaceted, and I think that just, you know, being able to balance all of that's a great. I know earlier you mentioned, you know, wanting to be hit every once in a while. Do you happen to be in any sort of men's league?
I'm not in the men's league. I've skated in a couple events, kind of for charity, for fun. But I do get to skate with the Gopher guys a little bit. I don't know. Like I think it's tough because once you get in that competitive space to where you are, you know, going all out. Like I don't know if like I miss that part, but I don't know what that means as far as like it being in that space with other people doing the same thing. It'd probably be good for me, but I haven't yet. So yeah.
So two-parted question, kind of getting hit, but not really. Have you ever plunged in a lake before in the winter in Minnesota?
I have. I know that you guys have talked about Sanapapi and Embrace North. I've been over there a couple times with
You
Jake Curry.
have. Let's
Yeah.
go.
So I haven't
Excellent.
in a while, but like it was great. So Jake, I think, works with them. He's a former Gopher and does some training now and brought me over and he did some a little workout and then the hot and the cold and it was great. Like I felt amazing afterwards. So I know that the benefits and stuff and it's always like the things that I know are really good for me. I should do them more, you know?
Yeah, it's always the case, but it's almost like you know you're doing it. You know, you shouldn't have to put the judgment on yourself of saying you need to be doing more of it. I tend to do that too. Is like I get in the ice bath, you know, once a week. I try to go on a weekend, and then I'm like, I should probably do this 3 or 4 times a day. The benefits are amazing, but it's like you're doing it. It's okay. Another thing with the Gophers, they just had one of their better seasons this past year. Is it official to say that the Gophers are back?
Yeah.
Gopher hockey, like top playing, like competing for national championships.
Yes, I think so. I mean, it's tough when kind of when I played, I don't think there was a Minnesota Wild. Obviously, there wasn't, you know, the cell phone, the social media. So it was one of those things where you go to an event with your friends, you know, to hang out and spend time together. And now there's so many other things going on. But actually, this year we've seen just an increase in tickets, a lot of sellouts. So it's fun seeing the butts back in the seats and the student crowds bigger. And so just kind of the energy, you know, for the guys, because it's so much fun when you have the people to support you to show up and cheer to get that. And we've been, I think, ranked from anywhere from 1 to 5 this year. And we have a lot of top end talent. We're really young. Last year we were in the Frozen Four. So I think we're right there knocking at the door. But I was like historically for us Gophers, you know, talented but younger. A lot of the teams that we play are, you know, 2 to 3 to 4 years older and have a little more size and have played juniors a little bit. So it's trying to get skill guys that are the best players on their team to come in and buy into doing some of the little things right and playing together, which they're doing a great job. So it's more fun just watching them because they're a lot more talented than I remember being. So, and they're great. You know, they're a lot of fun and you know, keep you young. So.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, they are studs, and that's always been the knock where they go younger because they get the skill players versus the guys that are going up to juniors and coming back down to get a couple extra years in hockey. And you know, that's St. Thomas's way. St. Thomas is now Division I in hockey. We're going to be building out a new rink, I think, in the next 4 or 5 years as they're playing at STA still. Has St. Thomas played the Gophers? Or I know they play like Duluth and Mankato, because that's the division that they're in, but I don't think they've scheduled the Gophers yet.
I haven't seen them. We had an exhibition
game
game
with them
with them
last year,
last
I think,
year, I think
over
Christmas.
Christmas.
Okay.
Rico and then the crew. So I haven't seen anything on in the near future, but it's great to see. It's good for hockey. It's good for other players to get that, other people to get that opportunity. And there's already quite a few colleges in the state, so it's good that they have a team.
Got it. Yeah, I mean, go ahead.
Quite a few. Yeah, there's like a billion of them. There's so many. State hockey's real. Could be its own conference.
There's the ebbs and flows, the ups and downs. There's the teams that are rising to the occasion, the teams that are not, and then there's teams in the middle of the pack. We're growing every day. We're trying to get out of the middle of the pack as wildly average guys. You know, we're trying to peacock a little bit and stretch our wings out. This is one of our favorite questions to ask here on the show, Paul, is what is your average quality? What is something that you're doing well at times and other times not so well? And you care about it enough to get a little better at it.
Yeah. I mean, I think I touched on it a little bit earlier, you know, I think being done with sport for a while, it's like trying to figure out, you know, what I'm good at and, you know, how I can help other people. So like that communication part or like public speaking or talking in general, when it's about something that you care about deeply and want to articulate, you know, the meaning and purpose behind it, which I'm getting better at. But I think just in general, like through COVID, you don't have that many experiences, you know, as far as podcasts are growing, but like to get in front of people and really share the message of what we're trying to do. I mean, I've been told by girlfriends I'm not the best communicator too. So I'm sure there's reasons there where I can, you know, work on stuff like that. But as far as something like tangible that I feel like I've been trying to get better at is being handy. My dad's pretty handy and used to probably do a lot of things, you know, for me, cause I was playing a lot. So my focus was hockey, but now like I live out kind of in the suburbs and, you know, trying to, you know, fix things and build things. You know, I'm the guy that like the halfway through the IKEA build, that's all wrong. And so you have to get either or start over. So it's like, we're getting better, but I know that there's room for growth there. So
you realize, you know, as you start to get into your handy years, how sacred the garage is, and how that is really the foundation of everything. This is speaking from someone whose father had a really nice garage. I don't have one personally on hand, but I have also gotten a little bit handy in my in the last couple of years. I built a desk for my girlfriend. You know, the standing desk industry right now is ridiculous. You can't find a standing desk that's less than $400. And so I, you know, I went to the old Home Depot and built one from scratch. You know, took all the measurements, designed it myself, and here you go. And I think it's one of those funny things. It's like I grew up an athlete too. Like my dad was finishing the basement as I was like going through my high school football career. So it was like I never really got to like hang the drywall with him or do the framing or do the plumbing or any of those things. But now, like, of course, I'm in construction, like managing these exact people doing it. So, you know, it's totally been flipped around. Do you feel something primal inside you when you are doing handiwork?
Yeah, it's like we talked about a little earlier, like the things that I struggle with or have the toughest time with are usually really good for me. I get something from, you know, so yeah, whether it's 100%. Building something and struggling through it, or even like schoolwork or something, like once you get to the other side and you know that you put in the work, whether it doesn't look great or not, depending on what, you know, I've built, like there's always, I think, a little bit of a sense of accomplishment. So that, you know, that sparkling ice water at the end tastes good after a little sweat doing something. So.
Absolutely. Is there a piece or something that you've made that you're pretty proud of recently that you'd like to maybe talk about or display?
No, I don't have really anything that I've built that would be worthy of show. I mean, I'm kind of like technically like the bird guy. So I've got some bird feeders, a little bird house.
Okay, that's cool.
So in the back,
go off.
So yeah, you know, and so I don't know if I'm like the bird guy or what, but I got, you know, the turkeys come and they fly and they knock down all the seeds for the squirrels. So it's like a whole cast of different animals in the backyard here. But that's kind of been my thing recently.
A little bit of evolution going on in the backyard. I like that. Is there anything that you plan on building soon here that you'd like to put on the show? Maybe we follow up on.
Yeah, I like that. Holding me accountable for some kind of goals. I want to
build a little bit.
Yeah, I have a lot of vinyl records and I don't really have a nice shelf for it. So I want to, I actually had to send a message to my dad if he'd help, you know, if that's a big ask, because usually it's like dad was doing it and if you want it done, you got to do it right. So he'd have to have some patience with me, you know, going through this process. But something like that, maybe to build a little vinyl record holder for my vinyl would be something I'm on the list.
That is a
Oh.
cherished possession. I recently just got an end table, but it is a record table, and I thrifted it at a market down the street. And the lady, I said, I'm looking for an end table, and she goes, "Well, I don't have an end table, but I have a record table," and went on to describe the story of how this is Jacques Wayne's he's a semi-famous musician and a former engineer, his record table. And it has all this meaning and stuff. And the handles, if I ever get in financial trouble, each handle's worth $30. So I could sell those. I bought this thing for $50, so the handle is more expensive than the table. But and then at like checkout, I was like, "Oh, I'm so excited to put this end table back in my apartment." And she goes, "Will you quit calling it an end table? It's a record table." I was like, "Oh, sorry. I'm not gonna use it as an end table."
That's
Yeah, so I'm excited to see the progression of you hanging the or building out the record or the vinyl shelves. As you challenge yourself to get a little more handy, I'd like to ask you to challenge us to extend further into this mental wellness space, even further into the Paul Martin network. Is there anyone that you'd like to see on the Back Pocket Podcast as we continue these conversations?
Oh, wow. In regards to mental wellness, you're saying mental health?
For sure.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, the people that I know that, are at work with Masonic. I know Mark Parrish has a new foundation that he's getting to work on over there. Mark Wick is on our board, Coach Wick, and he does a lot of chats with college and high school teams about mental health, and the relationship with athletics. It would be great, I think, for you guys. I don't know what Mark does, a lot of NHL Network and stuff. He's kind of a big time, but those would be some pretty good names.
We're gonna have Mark Parrish on. We
Okay.
yes, he actually just responded to our email, and we're gonna get him on. Is there anything we should ask Mark Parrish that you think would be either like catch him off guard or just be an interesting talking point?
It took him probably 2 weeks to respond to your message. Is
Yeah,
that right?
exactly.
Yeah.
That's exactly what happened.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, you can ask him who his favorite Golden Gopher is and why St. Cloud has never, won a national title. I think he'll get talking about that pretty good.
Sweet.
He has a pretty good story too, not like mine, but similar. So it's good that he's in a good spot and kind of giving back too and doing some things at Masonic that are going to benefit the kids. So.
Sweet.
Cool.
Well, we'll definitely ask Mark Parrish that, and I think Mark Wick is not out of our realm of influence. I think we can finagle something there, absolutely.
I mean,
And
are
are
you
you
lo so
look so
you're
you're
looking
looking
for
for
more
more like
like someone
Someone
like
like
through
through
experience? Like
experience.
for
Like for
some
some
reason, I
reason, I
was
was
thinking
thinking
of
of like
Nick
Nick
Schwarzden.
Schwartzen.
Like, do
Like,
you
do you
know
know
who
who
Nick
Nick
is?
is?
Like, from
Yeah, I've
comedian.
met Nick Schwartzen. He'd be great too.
Actually, I'll tell this story, Deck, with Nick Schwartzen. Deck used to live in Minneapolis. Now he's out in AZ. But when he did, he was running the circle of stand up comedy for about 2 years, and we were at the Comedy Underground. He was Declan was going to go up for an open mic. And all of us were in the audience ready to go see him perform. And Nick Schwartzen, lo and behold, is there just like smoking a dart outside. And we're like, "Oh, I wonder if he's gonna like do a set at all tonight." Well, he sure enough does a set, and he's scheduled right before Declan. So Nick Schwartzen goes on, absolutely crushes, and then Declan comes in right after and lays the biggest grenade of all time.
Dude, it was the hardest bomb I ever had, and it was like the fourth time I did comedy, and the first 3 times was just like so great. I was doing like an Acme show and like a bunch of bigger crowds, and I'm like, wow, what a great time to finish off the week on a Friday. All my buddies are here. Schwartzen goes on stage. I try and like parlay his last joke into my first joke, and just like no one laughs, and it was just the worst experience. I think they lighted me off early. It's fantastic. He's a nice guy, though. He's awesome.
Yeah, what a experience. I mean, you learn something from it, right? Like you got to do that at least once or twice, right? Like that's part of the
It's part of the game.
Dude,
Yes.
I'm not kidding. Those 2.5 years in Minneapolis, like we were living in Uptown, doing like I think we did 120 podcasts in the year of 2018. I was doing comedy for all those times, and like I will always like cherish those, because now I can go and speak in front of any sort of audience, any sort of time. I'm like enthused to get my stage time back. That was one of the best decisions I've ever made, was just doing stand-up comedy for as long as I did. And I would still happily go and run the open mic scene. I've just been legitimately removed from society for about 2 years. I'm working on a nuclear power plant in Arizona. It's a long story, but basically I've just been isolated for a long time. I lived in an RV for a year. Now I'm still out in the desert. There's no open mics here, so that's my point. But that experience, like, I know you were talking about, like, trying to get to your point and really speaking passionately about something that you care about, and you know, really trying to clearly communicate that. I'm not really going to tell you to, like, go and start doing open mics and stuff like that, but just the mindset of, like, reps. Like, what is your open mic, or where is your classroom that you can go speak at, or what are those reps that you can get? If it's 5 minutes, even, you'll have, and you continually do that on a week to week basis, it's going to make a huge difference. So that would be kind of just my tidbit of information to share with you, because I know you mentioned that earlier.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Thank you.
Cool.
Awesome. And we got two final questions here for you before we wrap up. First one is a core question here at the back pocket. What is in your back pocket when pressure becomes stress and anxiety is rising? What do you use in your back pocket to overcome this? It could be something figurative, or it could be something literal that you actually carry around in your back pocket.
Yeah. I mean, I suppose figuratively, you know, which is kind of a perspective over a lot of, you know, I guess last couple years. And for me, I've spent a lot of time kind of in solitude and kind of meditating or whatever, not whatever, and meditating, which is really kind of centered around breath work. So for me, it's been like my breath, you know, that kind of gets me back into where I'm at and where I need to be. And then, you know, kind of out of like a philosophy standpoint, like the Stoics have a couple that I've been reading about the Stoics, and one of them is, I don't know if it's coined by, you know, Epictetus or Marcus Aurelius, but it's like memento mori, or like you could leave the earth at any time, kind of. And it just kind of the perspective that, like, the acceptance of kind of what's happening, and just kind of reminder, like, that whatever I'm right where I'm supposed to be, and whatever I'm doing is kind of enough. So it just kind of reminds me, like, to have some space for perspective with where I'm at, if that makes sense.
Makes a ton of sense. It is a challenge. I mean, that is something definitely that resonates with me. And it's an everyday thing where you have that future tripping, and you're thinking that you know, professionally or personally, you should be here, and you're getting anxiety just because you're not going to be there anytime soon, and it's stressing you out. But lo and behold, you're doing so many beautiful things, and there's a lot of beauty around you. And I think the meditation aspect has been a key in my life to slow things down, as someone who's just like constantly feeling like they're in a race and they want to push themselves. Maybe it's that inner athlete in me, but taking those deep breaths and, you know, meditating or getting in the ice water, or, we talked about this, with Mark Dowdle, journaling. It's the smallest things, and it sounds corny, but it really isn't. It holds so much value. So thanks for sharing that. That's really awesome.
The final question that we have for you is a simple one. We kind of asked it earlier, but we'd like to focus it down into the present day. Is, what did you learn today from the time you woke up to the time we're talking now?
Wow. I mean, I've learned a lot. Hopefully a little bit about you guys, you know, and what you're trying to do. I've been doing a project for school. So right now the book I'm reading is Road to Character by David Brooks. And it talks about, he refers to the Bible like Adam. So it's Adam 1 and Adam 2 values. So he kind of characterizes resume values, which he thinks is kind of more common in today's individualistic society, you know, like, and then kind of eulogy values, like what people kind of say about you, your character, and how you lived your life. So it's kind of that distinction that I'm learning about now to help me with my project about youth leadership and stuff like that. So, yeah, it's interesting. Like how many, like the range we talked about, the books that I've been reading. So that's, I love that question. Just what you're learning today, you know, that's so important. So, how about you guys? What do you got?
Ooh, what did I learn today?
Okay. I have a very interesting one. I learned that, oh man, I basically, that if you are going to change a pipe connection from a weld neck to a slip-on flange that the dimensional difference is about 3 1/4 inches and not 3.5. And I didn't calculate that in my measurements that we were doing today, and they went to go install this piece of pipe and some things were messed up and I was getting yelled at. So that was the miss that I had today. So if any of you guys are welding pipe anytime soon, just know that the dimensional difference between a weld neck and a slip-on flange is about 3 1/4 inches.
Mmm, wild.
Juicy. I know, dude.
Juicy. my day job is in marketing, and I just finished this documentary called Pepsi, Where's My Jet? It's on Netflix. Highly recommend it if anyone is Seen looking that. For something to watch. The storyline, and what I learned is marketing in the 90s is what was way cooler. It was just way cooler. It just felt way more raw and just like slinging from your hip, and you're also doing like national television. Like that was like the creme de la creme of marketing. With Pepsi, they ran this promo of get a certain amount of points and you can get some like Pepsi merch. You can get like free cans of Pepsi XYZ. If you buy a certain amount of Pepsi, you get these points. Well, they ran this commercial spot and the last slide was 7 million points gets a fighter jet, a military jet. And this young 20-year-old whippersnapper was like, well, let's figure out how much money I need to get this jet. And he did the math and found some loopholes, and it was like $700,000. And he fundraised the money to get this jet, because in the commercial, it didn't have a description at the bottom that said terms and conditions apply. It was just like, you can actually get this jet. So he crowd raised $700,000 and sent in the check to Pepsi and said, where's my jet? And I'll leave it at that. That was like the very beginning of the documentary. And then the next few episodes are killer. But that's like, yeah, like that was so cool.
You're going to leave me hanging? I got to watch it now. All right.
It's, yeah, that's just electric. I think most things in the 90s we can take and apply to this time of day. It's definitely like one of those things like there's definitely like fashion, like, you know how fashion's kind of cyclical and like you take certain things from certain decades and apply them like 30 years later. And I feel like that's exactly what we're doing in the 90s right now with all kinds of stuff. And Andrew, I really appreciate that. You got me hooked. So I'm all over that.
Sweet. Paul, thank you so much for joining the Back Pocket today. I really appreciate the hour you gave us. And looking forward to, you know, growing our partnership or something that we're doing, we could do in the future. I think there's definitely something there.
Yeah. Andrew, Declan, thank you so much for the time. I appreciate it. And yeah, I'd love to work together down the road and what you're doing there with Masonic, any way that I can help or we can help, would love to. So thank you.
Cool. Best of luck on that vinyl set, man. We're looking forward to seeing what it looks like.
Awesome. Is there like a time, like next year? We'll go and give it a year.
Oh yeah. I mean, we if we need to go further in the year, you know, that's fine. But you know, it'd be nice to follow up within the year. I think that'd be great.
Okay. All right. Sounds good.
Sick, man.
Awesome. That's a wrap.
Take care, dude.
Seeing double. Tell the whole squad out the back door, man, I think it's time to huddle. Yeah.